Hi, I'm Daniel Lenzian, host of Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studio. Western New York Soundstage is a podcast that looks to explore Western New York's creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. It is great to be back recording after our summer break. My time away was very, very busy, and I was lucky enough to be working in New York City, Michigan, and Italy, and I am so glad to be back and speaking to people in Western New York. Today's episode is about agritainment, which is a portmanteau of the words agriculture and entertainment. This episode will be released in the fall of 2022, and it is a beautiful time to be in Western New York. The air is crisp and the leaves are changing colors, and it is great to be outside. In order to capitalize on the perfect autumn weather in Western New York, some agricultural-based businesses have expanded their offerings beyond pick-your-own fruits and vegetables or buying farm direct. These farms and vineyards have become destinations for food, art, entertainment, and education. On today's show, I speak to Melinda Viscara, co-owner of Becker Farms and Viscara Vineyards, and Kurt Guba, the vineyard manager at Freedom Run Winery. Both of them were so generous with their time and answers, and I hope you enjoy hearing from them and learning about their businesses and agritainment as much as I did. Mindy, thank you so much for joining me today. Just to get started, I'd love to know if you could just provide, it can be as brief as you want it to be, a brief history of Becker Farms.
How about as long as you want it to be?
I'm great with that too.
I'll try to keep it brief. It started with my great grandfather in 1894. It was just a general farm then. You know, most everybody lived on a farm then. So they had, you know, cows and grain and chickens, and they always raised apples though. Farm then went to my grandfather. He was born and died in the little house that we now have our farm market in. So he lived his whole life there, and it was still stayed like a general farm. He had milk cows and crop farm and apples, always apples, but he had no sons. So the farm went to my mother. My father wasn't really a farmer. He worked for General Motors, but he kept it going part-time. It was kind of like a hobby farm for him. And he raised tart cherries for pie fillings in that generation. And I think he kept it going to keep my brother and I and grandfather out of trouble because we were the main employees of the farm, as well as like the local kids. I enjoyed the farm when I was young. I raised calves. I raised horses. I boarded for my friends' horses. And we had a lot of fun on the farm when I was young. You know, when you live in a small town, after a while, you want to know what else is out there. So after high school, I took a couple of years off and I traveled around the world. This was in the 70s. You know, we could do those things back then, or we did that. After, like I said, a couple of years off, I realized I really did enjoy agriculture. And I came home, I went to school, I was studying agriculture, thinking that I would go into maybe international agriculture, because how was I going to make a living on a small farm? That was not really practical. But while I was at school, I met my husband, Oscar, and he's an immigrant from Peru. He was going to school for landscaping. He wasn't a farmer. I had to turn him into a farmer. He's going for landscape architecture. I would tease him. I would say, why are you working for the man? Why are you working for rich people? You should be feeding the world. And of course, he shot back and he said, well, how can you leave your family farm? Do you know how many people in the world would love to have land and you're just going to leave it? He said, if you want to save the world, you can save one, you can save me. He said, I think I can make your farm better. I've got some ideas. So we decided that we would, you know, that was a pretty good line, you know, so I took him up on it and we figured we would try it. We both transferred to Cornell University and we studied pomology, which is palm fruits like apples, peaches, pears, you know, northern fruits. And there our small fruit professor said, you can make a living on a small farm if you sell directly to the public. And that's what we needed to hear. And it was, like I said, late 70s by then. Pick your own was really popular. So we started with pick your own strawberries. We grew a wide variety of things because when my father had the farm and we still were raising the cherries when we took it over back in 1979, we were totally dependent on the processor. There was only one processor in town. They would tell us what the price is, which would always be very low. They would pay us 6 months to a year later. And if they didn't want the product, they just said, no, thank you. And the crop fell on the ground. So we knew that wasn't realistic to make a living on a farm that way. So we went kind of the complete opposite. We grew a wide variety of things. We started with strawberries was our first crop, strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, the small fruits. We planted our apple orchard. And at one time we had peaches and pears. We don't have those anymore, but we still have 35 acres of apples. We also grew vegetables in the beginning for pick your own. And the pick your own was good for the first few years. People were asking for more services. You know, they're like, can I have something to drink? And can't you pick it for me? And things like that. So we had no money, of course. So we turned the farmhouse into a market, retail market. And then every year we added on, we listened to what our customers said. One year we had a big bale of straw sitting out for decoration and we couldn't keep the kids off of it. They just wanted to play on it. So we're like, okay, if you want to play, we can do play. So we started doing our, we called it our pumpkin fiesta. We had big bales of hay or straw that the kids could play in. We did hay rides and pony rides and corn mazes. And it was a kind of a way to be able to sell our pumpkins in the fall along with our apple season. And then we added on our sweet cider, you know, a building for cider. We moved a big barn from down the road and started our apple barn. And every year we added on to listening to what our customers wanted. We also have always done educational school tours. So we have done that for the last at least 35 years, maybe longer, for school tours. And then we got to the 2000s, 2001, and we kind of reached a plateau. We were catering to young families with kids. And unfortunately, in Western New York, a lot of young families with kids are moving out of the area. So we were looking for, you know, the next step, what else we could do. And Oscar was appointed to the state committee with the USDA. It was a part-time job, but he got to oversee all different kinds of farms. And he came back from Long Island. They went to Long Island and the Finger Lakes, and he came back and he said, you know, they're really rich in Long Island. They got a lot of money. He said, they're spending lots of money. He said, they're really rich, but they're not any smarter than we are. And you know, in the Finger Lakes, you can be a small farm and be a winery. And you don't have to make wine from grapes. You can make it from other fruits. And he said, we're going to make wine and you're going to do it. Because he said, I was better at chemistry. So, and at that point we had had a lot of excess fruit, because over the years, you know, the first 20 years, the pick your own was real popular in the beginning. But then through the 90s, you know, like women went back to work, you know, Wegmans and Tops up to their game in the produce department. You can get produce year round. You know, when we started, people would pick 50 quarts of strawberries because you couldn't get strawberries in the store. Now you can get strawberries 365. So we had a lot of fruit laying in the field that wasn't enough to sell wholesale, but it was being wasted. So by making wine, we could pick the fruit, freeze it, and then make it into wine. And we opened the winery in 2004. We were fortunate that my daughter was graduating from Alfred University just about the same year. And she called us up in March and she said, I think you guys have bitten off more than you can chew and you need my help. So we said, okay, great. You can come and help us. We never pushed our kids to go into agriculture or be on the farm because it's not that easy of a lifestyle. You know, it's pretty difficult and you really have to have a passion for it. So we never pushed them. I mean, they always worked on the farm and did their own thing, but maybe a winery sounded a little better than a farm, you know? So my daughter, she came back and she had gone to school for business. So that's a big plus. She's been a help our business doing the business things. We're really farmers that are doing retail. So we opened the winery in 04 and she got married a couple of years later and we did the wedding here. After that, people say, well, can you do my daughter's wedding? She said, yeah, I can do. I just did that. I'll do that. So that was kind of her niche. She started our private events division. She went back to the Culinary Institute, Niagara Falls, to learn the business of catering. And after we did the first year, maybe 6 and then 12, and then it's like, oh my God, we have all these weddings. So we did a deep dive again, you know, borrowed lots of money all over again after 25 years and built a wedding venue and bought all the equipment and set ourselves up for that. That worked really well for maybe 4 or 5 years. And she came to her father and said, you know, I turn people away every day, every week, because our wedding venue is full. And of course he said, well, we're just going to have to build another one. So we built a second wedding venue and she had it full before it was even finished. She booked it the year before and we built it through the winter and it was ready in July. So at our peak, we were doing over 100 weddings a year. That was besides all of our farming that we did and the winery that we did. And they'd say things like, well, the wine was pretty good, but I wish I had a beer. So he said, oh, we should do something about that. And my youngest son had just graduated from RIT, and he graduated with illustration. He's our artist. He had been out in Colorado doing the ski thing for a season or so. And he said, you know, there's a lot of microbreweries out here. And we said, yeah, why don't you come back and help us open a microbrewery? So he came back, I think it was 09. Of course, we didn't know anything about breweries, beer or anything. We'd learned about wine, but not much about beer. But we started redoing one of our buildings into the brew pub. And there again, Oscar was going to Albany with a farm bureau to lobby the politicians. So on the bus was Tim Herzog from Flying Bison. So they were going to lobby the politicians for easier laws on microbreweries. So they started talking and he said, don't worry, you don't have to make the beer. I'll make the beer and you can sell it. So we opened our Becker Brewing Company. Tim supplied us with the beer and we sell like 30 to 40 kegs a weekend. So we sell a lot of beer. And he was happy with that too. He was just getting started and he needed new outlets. He supplied our beer for several years until 2016. We bought our own equipment and now we make our own, but we also always have a guest beer from Flying Bison. Then in 2011, I believe it was, my oldest son, he'd been in California. It was getting pretty expensive out there. So we said, well, why don't you come back? And he says, well, you know, here in California, they have a CSA, Community Supported Agriculture. And he's the one that likes to grow things. He's more the farmer and he likes to take care of our animals. So we came back and we started growing vegetables again. He started the CSA and we have about 300 members that we deliver a share to every week of everything that we grow on the farm. So I've got all three kids here and we're pretty busy all the time. We hope someday to retire, but it seems pretty hard because we're all so busy. Like nobody's got time to take over our jobs. We say we're retired in the winter.
That is so amazing to see how the sort of whole family is involved and it's kind of been in the family for generations and how much the business has sort of shifted or kind of like how I think it sort of has grown over the years.
Yes. Every year we would add something new, change things, you know, tweak things. What's the next trend? I have to credit my husband, Oscar, because one thing, you know, he wasn't a farmer. I mean, we made him a farmer. He went to Cornell University for agriculture, but he had more life experience off the farm doing different kinds of jobs and he also lived in the city. So he knew what people from the city want or were interested in. You know, like when you live here all your life, it's nothing's that interesting. You know, like when we decided to do our school tours, he said, well, we have to take the kids in the barn. And we have it's like 150 years old. It was built in the 1850s. You know, it's an old barn. To us, it's just an old barn. And he's like, no, you don't understand. When you drive by, people want to know what's in there. You know, like to us, it's not a big deal, but he's like, no, no, you got to go. They got to go in the barn because that's really cool. You know, everybody wants to know what's in there. So that's why I do the school tours. The kids come in, sit down in the hay bales and then I do my educational talk in there. So he had insight that when you are in it, you don't see it, but from the outside, you have a better perspective and what your assets are really.
Western New York Soundstage is a podcast about the arts. I'm interested to know, what is Becker Farm's connection to the arts?
Well, my son Andres went to RIT for illustration, so he's our resident artist. He does all the labels for the farm and the graphic designs for the website. And he is also our wine, beer, and cider maker. And we feel that, you know, wine is art. There's a lot of creativity that goes into making those products from, you know, from raw material to a yummy, delicious drink. My husband, also Oscar, was I went to school for landscape architecture, so he has a really good eye. If you come, you'll notice a lot of we have a lot of different gardens and things that are that his planted, his imagination. And we started with nothing. It was just a field when we started.
I would even say too, right? Like in some ways, I'm a theater professor, so I see theater everywhere. And a haunted hayride is almost like a little kind of mini play that you're kind of riding through. So I think that's another fascinating.
Yeah. Oh yeah. That's for sure. Yeah. We try to find kids that like to, you know, that love Halloween and like to scare people. And we have a really, really fun time at the haunted hayride. So we try to get the creative types to come out and do that as well. That's a lot of fun. Yeah. There's a lot of creativity in agriculture and just in how things look, the aesthetics of it. You know, even a nice display of produce is artistic.
So you mentioned this, that Becker Farms is a working farm, and there are so many things that are going on the working farm. What does it take to maintain a farm in 2022?
A lot of labor. So we're a little bit unique in that we're not a traditional farm. One thing that we said from the beginning is that if we can't sell it retail, we're not going to grow it. We're not going to be in the wholesale business because the margin is too small. So you need a lot of acres to make any money on wholesale. So we said, we're just going to grow what we can sell retail because that's where all your inputs in. You know, you can spend thousands of dollars on a crop, but if you have nowhere to sell it or sell it at a profit, then you're sunk. So our farm is 340 acres. We rent 100 of it. There's 140 that is like conservation reserve and forests and that type of thing. And we use about 80 to 100 acres for ourselves to rotate the different crops around. In the orchards, we have 35 acres of apples and then the raspberries, blueberries, strawberries. And the other thing that's different about us is it is pick your own. So we do have anywhere from 4 to 6 farm workers. We have a couple that lives here all year round. It always helps us. And then a couple more come in. 6 would be an ideal number, but lots of times it's only 4. But they don't have to pick all the fruit because our customers pick it. They just pick what we need for the market and what we need for the CSA. So they're not picking 35 acres of apples. They're picking just what we need to sell and our customers pick the rest. So that helps because otherwise we would need a lot more people to get the crop harvested.
And Mindy, you're really hands-on. What I was so inspired by was we called before this Zoom call that we're speaking on, and you had to sort of jump on the line and check people out. So it really is like all hands on deck working all the time.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oscar and I, we've done every job there is to do, you know, so, and, you know, we are always here to back up our employees. We're right in there with them, you know, like last night, one of the weddings had a hayride back to our cabins and, you know, it was 10:45 and we didn't have anybody else to do it. So I did it. You know, like we do everything, you know, we do the jobs people don't want to do. We're kind of in the background, ready to jump in and make sure our employees can succeed.
So I have to ask, is fall your busiest season?
Oh, yes. Fall, September, October. This is the busiest season. Yeah. This month, October, this is go time. The other thing I didn't mention is we have a haunted hayride that we do the last 3 weekends in October. So then we're day and night. That's pretty crazy as well.
And that sort of leads right into my sort of next thing I want to discuss was there are so many events on the farm. Would you mind just highlighting a few for our listeners? This podcast, we're recording it, full disclosure, in October. We're talking kind of about the October sort of events that are happening. But if you'd like to mention any other events in the future, you're more than welcome to. But what's going on in October and the fall of the farm?
We have our fall fun on the farm on weekends. It's a ticketed festival. So you do purchase your ticket online ahead of time. And then that gets you an apple bag and it gets you into all the attractions. So we have like a corn maze, a grape maze. We have a mega slide that's for adults and kids. Tricycle track. We have a petting zoo. We have goat races for the kids. And then you also get your apple bag that you walk out to the orchard and fill your bag with apples. Or you can get a pumpkin, one or the other. So that happens on the weekends and that is ticketed. We try to keep it so that it doesn't get quite so crowded. During the week, there's no admission charge. You can just come and buy your apple bag and walk out and pick. So if you're really just interested in apples, it's probably better to come during the week. On the weekends, we have live music. That's the other thing. We've always had live music on Saturdays and Sundays in the fall. And we do have live music in Becker Brewing Company every Saturday evening throughout the season. We always try to support our local musicians. We also do fun things like boozy bingo and trivia night and those type of things. Our haunted hayride is going to be starting the last 3 weekends in October, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, starting on the 14th from 7 to 9. So that's a really fun thing to do. And we're a couple of years we did it as a drive-through because of COVID, but now we're back to actually being on the wagons. So that's a lot of fun to go through the forest in the dark with things jumping out at you.
I'd love to ask now that I've noticed online, and I think this is so brilliant, so many of the activities at Becker Farms are customizable. So I saw that it looked like on the haunted hayride, there was something that if you wanted to add a campfire, you could, or you can spend a night in one of the cabins that you've mentioned, or there's even like a private pie and coffee tour. Can you talk about the decision to make so many different levels of participation? And I think you mentioned this earlier, but just to underscore the importance of diversifying all the offerings at the farm.
Right. So like I said, we kind of had that bad idea of all our eggs in one basket way early on. So we try to do everything, you know, and it's worked out over the years because we have had years we didn't have an apple crop, but we had a pretty good pumpkin crop, and we still had the fall activities. So we can kind of weather the storms depending on which way the wind blows. And also during the pandemic 2020, we had no weddings, no private events at all, but we had lots of people come and pick apples because there really wasn't anything else to do. So we try to do a lot of different things and offer things, like you said, for groups. You know, we do our educational school tours, or senior groups like to come and do the pie and coffee hayride. You know, that's a fun thing to do. Or if you want to come and do the haunted hayride and have a little get together at the bonfire after with your friends, that's real fun. On Fridays too, we have a free fire Fridays, where we put some fires out so that you can come and enjoy a little campfire at the brewery. So we try to accommodate all different size groups and all different, you know, kids and adults as well.
Fantastic. Do you have a favorite memory of the farm you might be able to share with the listeners?
Well, even just last night when I had to do the hayride at 11 o'clock at night, I went and did the hayride, and the stars were out, and it was a beautiful night. It was quiet. There wasn't anyone around, and it was just so still and beautiful. And I thought to myself, this must be the center of the universe. I mean, it feels like when you're out here, and, you know, I know people that live in the city, they'll come to the country and say, well, there's no neighbors, there's nobody around. And I'm like, yeah, isn't that great? I've learned that people like to live in the city, so they don't understand it. But I guess to be out in the country when you're close to nature. I mean, we're very busy in the day, but it's nice to step out at night and feel like that you're part of nature, like you're part of what's out there. And there's no one else like cluttering the space. You know, in the city, I feel like there's just lots of people. You're just one of many. And when we're out here, you're just the one.
That's beautiful. I have two final questions for us. The first is, I think it's really amazing that you and your family balance your lives as farmers and being so invested in agriculture, but also being entrepreneurs, so invested in business, in thinking of ways of kind of diversifying income and diversifying your offerings, and consistently sort of listening to what consumers want and providing that. If you had sort of one bit of advice for a young entrepreneur or even a young farmer, right, what would that bit of advice be?
Don't be afraid to change and evolve. You don't have to look too far ahead. Like, we grew our business in stages, in steps. Every year was something different, or a little bit more. We would try something to see if it worked. Then we would dive in deeper. I know a lot of people, they'll spend, you know, millions of dollars to get this great business going, but then if they don't have the volume of people, or you need to test it out to see if it'll work before you invest too much of your money. When we started 40 years ago, I never would have believed that it would be this. I didn't even have that vision. The vision happens a little by little, step at a time. Never stop. Like, you can never stop growing, never stop changing.
Well, and that's an amazing thing to say, because when you visit the campus, it's incredible, right? To sort of say that this all was all built in stages, I think is a great bit of advice and something that I'm sure our listeners will take to heart. Final question, why do people need to visit the farm this year?
Because it's time to get outside. It's time to, you know, go out and do fun things with your family. It's a great family activity because the kids can have a good time. The adults can have a good time. The grandparents can have a good time. We do have a hayride that goes through the forest as part of your ticket, but you walk to the orchard. And we used to take it on rides, but that would make a lot of long lines and people waiting. Now you just walk out at your own pace. And it's just great to be out in nature and see, you know, apples growing on the trees and crops in the field. It just feels good. It's good for your soul.
Yeah, maybe find that center of the universe.
Mindy, that's right.
No, seriously. Mindy, thank you so much for your time today. It was incredible talking to you. I can't wait to visit Becker Farms. How can our listeners find you?
Well, they can check out our website, beckerfarms.com. We try to have all the information on there. You can also give us a call. Our phone number's on there, but it's hard to answer the phone when we're real busy. So it's, or you can email. There's a customerservice.beckerfarms@gmail.com that you can email. All that is on the website.
Fantastic. Thank you so much. It was great chatting with you.
All right. My name is Kurt Guba, and I'm the vineyard manager here at Freedom Run Winery.
Kurt, Thank you so much for talking to us today. Could we start off with you giving us a brief history of Freedom Run Winery?
Sure. So Freedom Run was purchased by the Manning family as a property, no grapes or vines on it. Well, actually, it did have some vines on it, but no vinifera vines. That is no traditional wine grapes. It had Niagaras and Concords and juice grapes on the property, and also some orchards on the property. They purchased the property back in 2005, 2006. First, vinifera vines went in 2006. And we planted Pinot Noir, lots of Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Riesling, Cabernet Sauvignon, Cabernet Franc, and a little bit of Merlot. The family didn't really know much about wine or the wine business, so they hired a lot of folks and did a lot of research when they started out. The first harvest was in 2007 from our own vines, although we did make a 2005 and a 2006 vintage, which I was involved with. I started with the winery in April of 2007. So I got to participate with the 2006 vintage, you know, bottling that and blending that. And yeah, I stayed with the winery right along for about a 5-year hiatus because I was the program coordinator for the viticulture and enology students at Niagara County Community College, and then came back here full time in 2019, October of 2019. Yeah, that's my history with the winery. The name has sort of an interesting thing. The right along the escarpment, where we're tucked up against the Niagara Escarpment. And the Niagara Escarpment is an important geological feature, not only for fruit growing, but also has a lot of history with the Underground Railroad. I think every farmhouse that was built here before the Civil War claims some sort of a connection to the Underground Railroad. And it's important because that big geological feature, escaping slaves could find that and follow it to get to the narrow part of the Niagara River and cross into Canada. So hence the name Freedom Run, running along the Niagara Escarpment.
That is incredible and such a necessary part of history to kind of keep revisiting so that people kind of don't forget and also realize the importance of the area.
Yeah, and it's wonderful with the Heritage Center and the Falls. There's a lot more attention to that segment of Western New York history that is being paid now. So yeah, it's wonderful that we can be part of that as well and have a connection with the Heritage Center and the Falls and all of that. So yeah.
In my kind of pre-interview research for the podcast today, some of your colleagues said, well, you should talk to Kurt because he has a history in the theater or history as an actor. So what was that history and what brought you to winemaking?
Well, I'm a graduate of Boston Conservatory and did touring theater for several years. I was first introduced to the area through Art Park. Art Park in Lewiston, you know, years ago used to give great union summer stock contracts. That was like the place to go for summer stock. And so that was how I was first introduced to the area. My wife at the time was working year round at, they also ran a small professional theater at Art Park at the church, and she was performing year round with the company there. So we had a base of operation and I was touring year round and then would spend summers here. So that was how I was first introduced to the area. Now I've been here for 23 years. So I guess I'm a full-time resident now. There's no way to avoid it.
Definitely. Definitely. So I think what I'd love to know sort of in a brief kind of small description is that Freedom Run is a working vineyard. And I'd love to know if there could be maybe a small description of the process of making wine. I think all I can think about is sort of Lucille Ball kind of in the, you know, giant sort of tub kind of dancing on top of the grapes. And I'm sure that that is not what you're doing, but for maybe our listeners who have the same image that I do, can you tell us what is the process?
Yeah, we don't do that often. That's a rarity.
Good to know you still do it sometimes.
Well, you know, it's funny. So the grapes come in, we grow. Yeah. Now we're for the last few years, everything we've been making has been grown on the property. We bring in the grapes, and the white grapes and the red grapes have very different lives. Most of the white grapes we end up pressing whole cluster. So all of the clusters go directly into our press and we extract the juice, and the fermentation starts on those things with clean settled juice. The red wines we actually ferment on the skins. So we harvest all of the reds. They are crushed and destemmed, and we start the fermentation on the skins. You can make white wine from red grapes, the juices, particularly with Pinot Noir, is clear. And we do make some white wine with Pinot Noir by pressing it off of the skins immediately and making white wine, and follows the white wine process. But the red grapes are fermented on the skins. And throughout that fermentation time, the skins need to be pushed down. The cap needs to be pushed down. So really, Lucy, although in the show, right, she's just crushing the grapes, but in actuality, that manual punch down would be what she would be actually foot treading. We use basically a big steel plunger that pushes everything down. We do it all manually. Once upon a time, if we had very large vats, or if you have 20 bins to do, sometimes it's just easier with your feet. So that was the reason I say, no, we don't usually do that. But truth of the matter is, sometimes it's just easier. So that can potentially still happen, although it doesn't really anymore. It's more for show. But then after the red wines are finished their fermentation, they get pressed. All of the skins and everything goes into our giant pneumatic press. And then red wine at that point is then racked and settled and then goes into barrel. All of our red wines are oak-aged. Some of our white wines are, particularly we always make some oak-aged Chardonnay, but our red wines are always see some barrel age. And we use a combination of French and Hungarian oak. And now we've actually just begun incorporating some American oak into our program. It's relatively new for us. But all of the wines are barrel-aged. And if you come into our tasting room, you can see right into the production area and see all of those barrels of red wine and some white wines. And it's not just for show. That's the real deal. It's not just poser in there. We're really doing the deal. It is a full-time working winery. So, and then after that, everything gets racked, settled again to make sure it's clear, and then bottled site as well. And we bottle manually. We don't have an automated bottling line. If we have a lot to do, we actually will contract with a mobile bottling line to come in and do large amounts at a time, but everything is bottled here on the property.
I'm wondering, like, because it is farming, right? And there is so much happening at Freedom Run, and just in terms of events and sort of the retail element and even bottling, right? What does it take to maintain the winery?
Well, we have a small dedicated staff. You know, we're not that big, so we don't have that many people working here all year round. The thing that we are most dedicated to is making sure that we have sound, healthy fruit year after year. And that's a large part of what I do. But then once the fruit comes in, Ryan, our winemaker, works tirelessly to make sure all of that fruit expresses itself in the best possible way, and that wine remains clean from grape to bottle. And then once all of that is done, we have Mark, who is our tasting room manager and manages all of the retail aspects of the business, who's in charge of making sure that thing gets sold. We also have marketing people that make sure that word gets out when things are ready, that people know when a new product is online, that they can come in to purchase that. We do most of our sales out of this building. We are in some retail outlets. I mean, we're in a bunch of restaurants and liquor stores, but most of the wine gets sold out of this room. In order to make sure that we're moving product, we have a growing wine club. So if you're interested in that, you can join the Underground Wine Club, Freedom Run Underground. We thought it was a catchy title. And with that, there's nothing to join the wine club. It's just you get 20% off all purchases of wine, and you get discounts to a lot of the events that we do. And we do a lot of events. We do wine education. We do art classes, jewelry making classes. We have music here on the weekends. We have a lot of things that go on, but you get first dibs on all of those types of events. And so there's a lot to it, just from grape to glass. And we have from the field to the tasting room, we have a lot of people that are very dedicated and very knowledgeable and highly experienced.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the things I've so enjoyed about kind of doing this whole podcast series is speaking to people and realizing that there are real people that you can actually meet. Like all the people that you just named and mentioned are real people that sort of work there every day, right? Where it's really nice to kind of visit a local space where there are local people working and local people creating things, right? As opposed to a sort of larger conglomerate or chain store or something like that. Not that there's anything wrong with that, but it is kind of amazing that everything is done right on site at Freedom Run.
Yeah. And if you come to visit us, you can, you see the vines, you meet the people that you can meet the people that are out there in the trenches, really doing the work. We are here every day. The people that make the wine, the people that grow the grapes, we're here and you can come and talk to us and see what's going on and really get a connection to a product, to a homegrown agricultural product. And that's what does make it romantic. You know, I said before, you know, the actual labor may not be as sexy as you think, but the idea that you can come in, taste the wine, see the literal fruits of our labor and have a connection to that very space, that very land where all of this product is created. And yeah, it helps to create an appreciation and a connection to that real local agricultural product.
The theme of this podcast is sort of agritainment, right? The kind of the sort of meeting of both agriculture and entertainment. And Freedom Run really does this with the events that you mentioned, right? Mm-hmm. There are wine tastings, there are art tours, there's a chocolate pairing. It seems like there's a you pick apples that can happen.
Yes, we actually have 1,000 apple trees on the property as well. We grow Jana Golds, Ida Reds, Cortlands, and Crispins, and that is in full swing right now. And we've just started doing you pick apples, you know, so it's something that we're growing. Most of the time we've been sending things off to juice or off to market. And we also make some products on here at the winery with our apples. We have a product called Applejack, which is sort of a fun, kitschy, freeze distilled apple wine that we make. And yeah, so we do some product, we make some products with our apples, but yeah, this is the first year we're doing U-Pick, and it hasn't caught on the way we want it to, because there's a lot of farms locally that do U-Pick. I mean, we have such a beautiful orchard and it's very well manicured, and it really is like walking through a park when you go out there and it's so dramatic when you see these trees just heavy with bright, beautiful apples. And yeah, it's just another added thing that fits right into your theme of agritainment. And we actually had another interesting event just last weekend. We always try to do one Saturday harvest that we open up to our customers to come. And if they feel like coming in to participate with the harvest, they can come and harvest grapes, help us pick up bins, watch the whole thing as we process fruit. And we did that just the weekend before last with our Stonehouse, the vineyard that's right next to the Stonehouse on the property. We have a manor house that was built in 1826 that we refer to as the Stonehouse. We had families come in. They always look forward to coming in and having their kids participate in the process. And yeah, it's a joy for us to share all of our excitement with the fruit as it's coming in and as that work is being done, to share that with everybody and for everybody to really get a hands-on look at what's happening.
You mentioned you started with Freedom Run in 2007. How has it grown since then?
The biggest area of growth has really been with events that we do here. And I'm talking about private events, weddings and anniversary parties, birthday parties, all that sort of thing. We have a barn that was also built around the same time as the Stonehouse, 1826, that people love to rent out for weddings and anniversaries, divorce parties, which is, you know, a burgeoning market. The that has been the largest area of growth and is actually responsible for as nearly as much income as the wine. We also have a huge production room that, especially in the winter, when the barn is less conducive to events because, well, it is a barn after all, it's not weatherized. We have a large production room, which is also beautiful, which people rent out for parties and events and such, and it works well with the tasting room area. We have a full liquor license. We have a commercial kitchen on the property that is available, and it certainly helps out with caterers that you bring in just to have that, the equipment there on site, although most of the caterers are pretty self-contained, but yeah, it's all there in case we need to do something. And we do dinners, and that area of growth has been the largest, the biggest thing that I can really talk about. And I don't have much to do with that other than making sure that the property looks nice for people when they come in to have whatever event they're having, but it's undeniable how much that's added to our business.
Is fall your busiest season?
Oh, far and away. As far as our tasting room traffic, that's for, even though that's not the time that we're generally putting wine in bottles, that is the time that we're bringing in fruit. And that's the time that people think of agritainment type of stuff. That's just what it is. Although it, in all honesty, it never stops for us. You know, all winter long, there's activity happening in that, in the vineyard and in the orchard. There's maintenance that always needs to be done out there. There's, as things are starting to grow, it's wonderful to go out there even in the height of summer or at the, in the spring when things are just starting to emerge. For me, that's the more exciting time, when things start to come out of dormancy and things are just starting to get green. It's beautiful every time of year, even in the dead of winter. And like I said, there's stuff happening out in those vineyards and in the orchard every season of the year.
So even though the sort of idea, I think, right, of kind of the harvest sort of so connected to agritainment, it seems like there is always, you are open year round. Yes.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And that's in terms of events and classes and things that we do, though, the wintertime is what really when we can dedicate a lot more energy to those things, you know, so, you know, like our pairing dinner that we do for Valentine's Day and have for the last several years, you know, that's a big event for us. And we love doing that. All of the classes that we do, you know, we're really able to dedicate a lot more energy into those classes during the, what most people consider our off season. And, you know, so those end up being much more polished and sometimes more fun.
Do you have a favorite memory of the vineyard you could share with our listeners?
So my first year working as vineyard manager here in my first season, actually growing grapes and, you know, with no tether, you know, going without a net, was in 2020. And it was probably the best way for me to dip my toe in the water, because it was the most idyllic season that I can remember here on the Niagara Escarpment, you know. So seeing all of the fruit come in, that everything was, every single bit of it was picture perfect. Every leaf on every plant was picture perfect. And feeling the pride with that very first harvest was, for me, it was an important year. Also, my very first harvest in 2007 was another beautiful year. I still have wonderful memories and wonderful pictures of sorting grapes till 2 o'clock in the morning under the harvest moon, and just finally being a part of that. You know, I had already begun my sommelier training at that time, finally getting my hands dirty and having that real connection from, you know, beginning grape to glass. And that was another important time for me. I remember one time we were selling grapes, a farmer from Maryland, and he came in with his three-year-old son. We were doing a tasting, and he would have his three-year-old smell every glass. And this, because, you know, the kid was growing up in the biz, he was having his three-year-old describe what he was nosing in every single glass. Yeah, it was an amazing experience. And I was like, yeah, this is, family agricultural businesses have a lot of meaning, and they're important to our, not only to our economy, but to our culture.
Thank you so much for sharing that. I have just one final question, but before I ask it, I'm wondering, do you feel as if there's anything that we haven't talked about today or anything that you'd like our listeners to know?
Gosh, there's so much. I mean, because we do so much and do so much with events. One thing that still amazes me to this day is when people who are local come in and either don't realize that there's grape growing in the area, and now with so many wineries in the region, it seems implausible to me that people wouldn't know that. Not just Niagaras and Concords and wines being made from what we would normally think of as juice grapes, but with every farm that pops up here and every winery that starts out here, there's more and more attention being paid to wines made from traditional European varieties, Cab Sauv, Cab Franc, Merlot, particularly Pinot Noir. Riesling, of course, you can hardly talk about New York State wine without talking about Riesling. But people are still amazed that it's happening in their backyard. And that when they come in and they say, oh, I didn't know there were wineries out here. And I say, well, you know, there's these waterfalls down the road. If you don't know a lot of stuff that's happening around here, that you might want to check that out too, of course, referring to Niagara Falls, because I feel like we're just as much and should be just as much a part of the agritourism in the region and tourism in general in the region as Niagara Falls. There's so much work being done, and it's just, and rural Niagara County is just so beautiful that if you haven't experienced it, well, you're missing out on an important thing that the region has to offer. And it's not just, I mean, yes, I'm talking about it from viticulture and winemaking, but it's berry farmers, it's apple farmers, it's peach farmers and cherry farmers. There's a lot of agricultural business in the area. There's a lilac farm just down the road from us. There's so many wonderful things happening right in your backyard. You don't need to travel to Canada. You don't need to go to even the Finger Lakes, which are, you know, also beautiful, but you can explore your own backyard and see what's happening just, you know, less than half an hour away from Buffalo. I mean, if you live in Williamsville or you live in, you know, in Clarence, you drive down Campbell Boulevard, you're here in 20 minutes. It's such a short jaunt.
Fantastic. Well, for people who, you know, are just learning about Freedom Run Winery, final sort of pitch to them, right? There are so many great events. There are classes. There's so much happening. Why do people need to visit Freedom Run Winery this year?
If you are into wine, come here and see everything happening in the trenches. Come and see what's going on. Participate in what's going on, grape to glass. You can learn so much just by walking in the door. And our tasting room staff can teach you so much just by you walking in the door and asking questions. People are eager to answer your questions and show you what's happening. Come and visit and really get a sense of what's happening, not just in the glass, but in the ground.
Fantastic. Where can people find more information?
Please visit freedomrunwinery.com. You can see all of our events that are coming up, all of the classes that are coming up. Everything is always listed there on the happenings page. There's a lot of stuff. We tell you what food trucks are going to be here, what days. We have food trucks coming in on the weekends, what music is happening, what days on the weekends. Just go and check it out. Whether you come for an event or you just come wandering in the door on a random Tuesday, you'll be guaranteed an unforgettable experience because people will be here to talk to you and show you what's happening.
Fantastic. Kurt, thank you so much for chatting with me today.
Thank you very much for having me.
Well, that is our show for today. And something that will definitely stay with me is how hyper-local both of these businesses are. It seems as if they are staffed by small, dedicated communities or families. Everything is done on site by people that you can meet, and decisions that are made by stakeholders are made to directly benefit the people of Western New York. I don't think a fall would be complete without a visit to Becker Farms or Freedom Run Winery, and I hope to see you there. Until next time, thanks a lot. Today's show is produced by Jessica Marinelli. Addison Schoonmaker engineered this episode. Make sure to subscribe to the show. If you like the show, please recommend it to a friend. In addition to this podcast, you can check out our local event guides posted monthly on buffalorising.com. We'll be back soon with more episodes where we explore our local creative economy through a series of conversations with artists, musicians, producers, directors, and authors from Western New York and beyond. Thanks for listening to Western New York Soundstage from Buffalo Rising and Local Matters Studio.